Hello, welcome to Home Baking, where we talk about baking at home through ingredients, history and culture. Today we're going to be talking about milky, fragrant and tart set puddings with no gelatin required. So one of them's thickened with using the acidity of lime juice and the other one is thickened with corn flour or cornstarch. And as well as that, we're going to be talking a little bit about a special ingredient, which you don't have to have this to make the recipes this week, but we will be talking about a special ingredient called amadine. It goes by other names too, but it's a sort of apricot fruit leather from Syria and Lebanon. And what we're making today is we are making a lime posset, a kind of creamy tart pudding from England. And we will be making mahlabi, which is a milk pudding from the Middle East. So let's get started. So let's just begin with a little bit of housekeeping, if I may. First of all, I'm sorry that this episode is a bit late. And I'm just kind of struggling with doing this on top of a new job and like other commitments and stuff. So apologies. Secondly, a lot of thought went into this episode. So I really hope that you enjoy it. Please do sign up to the newsletter. So it's homebaking.substack.com if you haven't signed up already. And that way you get a reminder when a new episode is out, but also you get all of the recipes and some of the notes from the episode as well emailed to you directly. Any other housekeeping, if you want to get in touch, it is still flourbuttereggsugar@gmail.com. That's flour, butter, eggs, sugar, like the ingredients, @gmail.com. Any other housekeeping? I think that might be it. the other thing is I'm thinking about moving to a monthly episode format I want to sort of keep the podcast going and be consistent, but without kind of like overexerting myself and still having some sort of social life. So that is kind of what might be happening. I think I'm going to do that. So just to keep you, aware of that. And the next episode is going to be about lemons. I'll tell you a bit more about that later. So without further ado, let's get into talking about our recipes this week. So first of all, let's talk about posset. So posset is more commonly made with lemon, which is also extremely delicious, but I overbought limes and so I decided to make a lime one, which was extremely nice. So you can definitely use lemon juice instead if preferred. It's an English pudding and it's essentially cream with sugar that's set with a citrus, the acidity from the citrus kind of sets the cream. It's quite tart. You do use quite a lot of lime juice, so I really liked the balance between the richness and tartness. I thought it was a really well-balanced dessert. And I've served it optionally with a blackberry sauce. Now, what I would caution is like, you don't want to add too much. You want to add it like maybe at the side or just like a tablespoon at the most on top of your posset, because you don't want to just turn the posset into another sauce. You want the posset to still have its silky, just set kind of texture. And I found that adding too much sauce made it too runny. But if you don't want to make the sauce, that's absolutely fine. Completely legitimate decision as well. I think that it's just as good without it. In all honesty, it's a very, very easy, delicious dinner party dessert. And other things that you could serve with it instead, lime and chocolate go really well. So it has to be dark chocolate though. But a square of dark, of really high quality dark chocolate would be nice. A plain buttery biscuit would be very nice. Like, it'd be a homemade shortbread, but equally it could be a very good shop-bought one. My favorite are the loo ones that are French. You could serve it with a few blueberries if they're still in season where you are. You could serve it with like a tiny bit of another type of fruit compote. I will leave it, up to you to decide what you want to do with it. And there's been different types of possets around apparently since the 16th century, but the kind of current acid set cold pudding dates back to the late 19th century. I found this funny. Possets are mentioned in both Macbeth, like I think it's Lady Macbeth talking about poisoning somebody with a posset, and also in The Silver Chair by C.S. Lewis, among many other things. Let's talk about how to make it next. America's Test Kitchen describes it as the easiest dessert to make, and I can confirm that is really, really easy. All you have to do is you have to get 400 milliliters, which is roughly the same as 400 grams of double or heavy cream, 100 grams of sugar, just a plain white sugar here. I used caster, but granulated is absolutely fine, not a problem. 90 grams of lime juice, which is about 6 limes or 6 tablespoons of lime juice, and also the zest of 2 of those limes. So the way that one would make this, and by the way, you can just swap out the lime juice for lemon if you prefer, and this makes about 4 portions. And what I like, especially because there's no egg in it, you can really easily scale it up or down. So if you just want to make 2 portions, then you just want to use 200 grams of cream, 50 grams of sugar, 45 grams of lime juice, and 1 lime zest. Or if you wanted to scale it up to make for 6, you could do 600 grams of cream, 150 grams of sugar, etc. So the way that you make it is you just heat the sugar and cream together until the sugar dissolves in the cream, stirring it occasionally. Then you turn the heat up and boil it vigorously but carefully. So I would occasionally stir it. Continuously stir it. And keep an eye on it. And you don't want it to overboil either. You don't want it to go over the sides. But you do that for 2.5 minutes. And that's to sort of help thicken it before you set it. Then you stir in the lime zest and juice. Then you just divide it between 4 cups or glasses and you chill it for at least 2 hours, or it could be up to overnight, but you just want to make sure it's very cold and it's set. And I found that this kept for 2 or 3 days in the fridge. So it's a brilliant make-ahead dessert. It's extremely delicious. The texture is very silky. One of the reasons I wanted to do these puddings is because neither of them use gelatin. And for some reason, I think it might be the fear of never having used it before. But also, I'm a bit like gelatin phobic. Like, I'm a bit like weird about, I don't like the texture of jelly. I think a small amount of it, I don't mind. So if it's to make what are they called? Those like little set puddings. But when it's to make a jelly, I really dislike the texture very strongly, and it's quite easy to use too much. So I'm a bit scared of it, basically. So that's the posset, and then the blackberry sauce, if you want to make that, if there's still blackberries around. You can also make this with frozen as well, frozen blackberries. But you want 300 grams of blackberries, about half a tablespoon or 8 grams of lime juice, and 150 grams of sugar. So all you're doing here is you are cooking that gently until the sugar's dissolved, and then you simmer it until it reaches about 102 to 105 degrees Celsius, or 216 to 221 Fahrenheit. And then you cool it down, and you can put it in the fridge as well if you want to. Or if you want to reduce it more, then you can kind of simmer it gently for a while. You want to make sure it doesn't stick to the bottom so it's not going to burn, but you just simmer it gently until it's kind of reduced a bit further. So that's a really delicious, lovely sauce. You don't want to put too much of it with the posset, partly for textural reasons, also because it will be too sweet, I reckon. And I'd say that if you prefer, you can just serve your posset with some fresh blackberries as well as the other things I've suggested, or instead. So that is our posset, very simple, to the point, but delicious. The second one is mahlabi, and this goes by different names. So there are different kind of milk puddings and milky drinks called sahlabi, malabi, sutlej, kasab, and mahlabi, and they are all, yeah, milky puddings, milky drinks found in the Middle East, particularly Palestine and Israel, Syria, Lebanon, and Turkey. We don't really have an equivalent in the West that I am aware of. The closest thing we probably have is creme pâtissière, or pastry cream, but mahlabi is more set. Like, it's quite well set. You use quite a lot of corn flour, so you can really kind of cut through it with your knife. And it's more delicately flavored. So, and there's no egg yolks, so it's not as rich. It's kind of more refreshing, I think. But it's kind of unusual if you're not used to it. Maybe even a bit challenging on your palate at first. Like, I kind of found the texture slightly odd, but as I got over it, I started to really enjoy it and find it really refreshing as a dessert. So it can also be made as a drink, and in that case it's often more kind of warming and cozy than this kind of cold, more refreshing kind of dessert. And the reason why it's sometimes called celeb or celebi is because that's named after an orchid root, which is native to, I think, like Cyprus, but I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, definitely somewhere in that region, which is actually endangered in the wild and very expensive. There are people who cultivate it still. And so, for example, in London, you can get celeb ice cream, both from Iranian grocery shops. I don't know how much real celeb they use, but it might be that they use some real celeb and some kind of additional flavouring, because it does have a flavour as well as making it a sort of unique texture. Or you can get it from some ice cream parlours, such as Soho Creamery, and it makes a kind of stretchier type of ice cream that I've spoken about before. So yeah, it's a thickening agent, is the celeb. But these types of puddings are now more commonly made with much cheaper thickeners like corn flour / cornstarch and rice flour. And the one that I base this one on is in Jerusalem by Sami Tamimi and Yota Motolenghi. So to make this one, what you need is 50 grams of corn flour or cornstarch, 700 milliliters of whole or full fat milk, and 80 grams of sugar. So it's not actually that sugared, which is really interesting. And I would recommend serving it with something sweet as well. So just add a bit to the sugar. So in the book, they serve it with a bay leaf syrup, which I'm sure would be lovely. I made it with a bit of orange blossom water, which isn't really, I'm sure that those probably exist because orange blossom is so popular in the Middle East. But it's not, I don't think it's a standard edition. It's just something that I really like. But you could instead, or as well, use like cardamom or vanilla or bay leaves or citrus zest instead of the orange blossom. And then, as I said, because it's not overly sweet, this makes about 4 to 6 portions. Then you might want to serve it with maybe a little bit of syrup. So if you don't want to make your own, then you could use a bit of maple or palm syrup, which is something that I buy from Sri Lankan grocery stores, or a light honey. Nothing too powerful because it'll overwhelm the flavour of the pudding, I think. You could also use a grape molasses, which is called petimetsi or pekmez, which is a lot more delicate because it's less sweet than honey, or like a date molasses, a date petimetsi, pekmez. Sometimes it's called date syrup as well, but the key thing is that it is pure. There's no additional stuff. It's just date syrup. It's just made from dates and that's it. Those would all be nice options. And then you could also maybe serve it with some chopped pistachios or walnuts or like a nice bit of fresh fruit maybe. Yeah. Again, you could use plain butter biscuits. That might be nice as well. So those are your options. And let's talk about how to make it. So you will start by making a cornflour slurry. So you take 100 milliliters of the milk and then you whisk in all of the cornflour, the 50 grams, and you're looking for a smooth, even texture, so you don't want any lumps. And then with the rest of the milk, which is 600 mils, and any whole spices that you might be infusing, like bay leaf, for example. You could even use it like a herb, to be honest. So gently heat the rest of the milk with the sugar until the sugar dissolves. Then when it starts to steam, add the cornflour slurry, and you want to keep up the heat and whisk it continuously until it thickens and it'll look like a thick custard. It gets even thicker as it cools as well, so it is quite like a firm set, but that is how it's meant to be. And at that point, before you divide it into the cups, you may want to stir in orange blossom. You may want to stir in something else, like if I was going to use vanilla, I'd probably add it here so that you get the maximum amount of vanilla flavor. That's if you're using an extract or a paste, basically, rather than the pod. Well, you could stir in a little drop of rose water, maybe, up to you. Then pour it into your cups or glasses, obviously taking out any whole spices as you go. And then in order to prevent a skin forming, you want to cover the surface of each portion of pudding with cling film or cling wrap, whatever you call it, and refrigerate those until they're set and cold, which will take at least probably 3 hours. And then you want to serve it, like I said, with a little bit of sauce or syrup, just a tablespoon or even less, depending on what kind of syrup you're using, because you don't want to sort of overpower the flavor, and you also don't want to change the texture of the pudding too much. So that's our milk puddings. I know I did really like them. As I say, I found them kind of refreshing. I added just the right amount of orange blossom, just a half a teaspoon for me, because it's quite strong. It's a quite a strong one. And I found that very Moorish. And I served it with a little bit of apricot sauce, which I'll talk about in a second. But you don't want to add too much because any kind of sauce you make might be quite strong. But it was nice with just a little bit. So as I say, I made this apricot sauce, and so I made it using this special ingredient that I said I was going to talk about, which is called amadine, which is an apricot fruit leather. So it is from like Syria and Lebanon. I think that at a certain point, a lot of it was made in what was then Syria, which is now Lebanon. So I'm not going to get into who it belongs to, because that is not my concern really. But it's enjoyed, you know, in Syria and Lebanon and Turkey for sure, as well as other countries in the area, I think. I got it in a Cypriot grocery store, and I saw it and just was so intrigued that I just had to buy it. Luckily for me, it does last quite a long time, and it does taste incredible, so you can just eat it on its own. It's very chewy, so it's a bit of a workout for your back teeth, but it really is delicious, and I will be able to make lots of other sauces with the amount that I bought as well, because the packet was like 400 grams of it, so it's quite a lot. It has a really long history, like people have been making this for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And just so that you're aware, it isn't pure apricot, so there is sugar added to it as well. But they use quite acidic apricots, so it's quite well balanced. The acidity to the sweetness is quite well balanced, even though it's clearly not a health food. And I loved the strong flavour of it, because I find that the fresh apricots I buy, maybe because they're not very good apricots, to be honest, tend to be kind of bland. I'm sure the ones that you buy in Lebanon are probably not as bland. But yeah, the ones I seem to get in my local supermarket are very bland. So this gave me more of the actual flavour of apricot that I often don't get, like a natural flavour. So I found it very delicious. And I guess something else that's kind of interesting to know about this fruit leather is that it's commonly eaten during Ramadan. So we've talked before about other treats, other sweet treats that people tend to eat during Ramadan. So mamoul is one of them, or that's eaten at Eid as well. At the end of Ramadan, dates. So you often will break your fast with dates, because that is following in the kind of tradition of the Prophet as well. And also, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but there's this drink that's actually comes from Manchester in England, and there's still a factory there as well, called Vimto. And it is a black currant drink, but it's very popular in Arab countries. I find Vimto extremely sweet, but Arabs often have a very, very sweet teeth. And when we went on a tour of the Vimto factory, we were told that that it's extremely popular in Arab countries, and B, that this is in the Arab Peninsula I'm talking about, not necessarily like North Africa, but yeah, very popular in the Arab Peninsula, and often people will add further sugar to it, which I was amazed by, because I personally find it so sweet already. But yeah, maybe you need the boost if you've been fasting all day. So let's talk a little bit about how to make this. Now, for quite a loose sauce, which is what I made, you want 100 grams of amadine and an equal quantity of water, of hot water, 100 grams. And all you do is you rip up the amadine, or you can cut it up with scissors. It's quite hard going with a knife because it's so chewy. So those are the best kind of options, I would say. And then you soak it in hot water, in the hot water for a few minutes. Like, I just get a kettle on and then pour over the correct amount. And then once that's sat for, I don't know, 10 minutes, half an hour, something like that, it's not sort of hugely exact. You then blitz it with an immersion blender or a high-powered blender. I used an immersion blender, and then just refrigerate it until it's cold. Now, that's a very simple kind of loose amadine sauce. If you wanted to make it more set, so there's quite a lot of recipes online where you've got like a layer of the set mahlabi and then a layer of set apricot pudding. And you can look those up yourself, but essentially they call for you to like thicken it with corn flour, much like we did with our mahlabi. And also you might reduce it as well, reduce the sauce to remove some of the water. So I shall leave that with you if you want to try it like that, but I kind of liked a slightly looser sauce personally. And yeah, so that's our recipes. And just finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of amadine. One thing I've not been able to find out is how long people have been making amadine or camadine. But I am, to be honest, I believe that it's like a kind of at least 1,000 years. But I'm not entirely sure. And that's one of the problems of not being able to read any Arabic, that a lot of the kind of information about it in English is quite sparse. But yeah, in this section, I just wanted to share with you 10 really interesting things about that I found out about amadine. So number one, which I think makes a lot of sense, to be honest, is that it is the kind of ancestor of fruit roll-ups and various other types of fruit leathers. And I found this really interesting article that I will link to in the newsletter. It's on the Thrillist website, which is about a Lebanese-American family called the Shaloubs, and how they helped to sort of develop this product and develop a kind of fruit roll-up product for partly for other Arabs, but also for the kosher market as well. Second fact is that it's most commonly served as a drink. It's not most commonly eaten as a snack, but it's sort of made into a drink, which can be quite thick. So you might serve kind of quite small portions. When it's a drink, it's often called Kamar al-Din, which means apparently moon of the religion. However, it's likely that it comes from a person's name, rather than like a kind of significant particular significance. Sometimes to that drink, rose water or orange blossom water is added, and often you make it in large amounts and then you serve it to a group of people who have gathered to have their evening meal breaking fast. Fact number three. So there's a similar but a slightly different product made in Iran called lavashak, which I apologize, I might be saying that wrong. Maybe it's called lavashak. But that product is often made with apricots or plums, but sometimes with cherries and other fruits as well. And it tends to be a bit thinner, and it does tend to be eaten straight up. I was wrong earlier when I said about the Arab Peninsula. It is actually enjoyed in North Africa as well, and East African countries that are Arab. So it seems to be enjoyed across the Arab world, in fact. Fact number five, it's often drunk alongside a cup of milk and a date when breaking fast. Fact number six, it's generally made with a particular variety of apricots, which are commonly found in the Ghouta region of Syria. Fact number seven, water, sugar and apricots are heated together and then passed through a sieve and then dried out in the sun. Number eight, the kind of scale of making Kamal Din is kind of amazing. It's a very popular product. And I just really enjoyed seeing the sort of pictures and videos of people making it. So I've linked a YouTube video in the newsletter for you to have a look if you want to. Number nine, apricot kernels are taken out during the process, but then they are exported to make popular products in other countries. You may have heard me talk about apricot kernels before, which have a very similar taste to bitter almonds. They're very toxic, so you cannot eat many of them, but I don't know why God decided to make something so toxic, so delicious, but I do love them. They are really, really good. One of my favorite biscuits is an Italian one made with apricot kernel flour. And I'm in a group with a lot of other bakers on Facebook, most of whom live in the US. And they were like a bit bowled over by the fact that we do actually eat apricot kernels in Europe. They were like, why do you eat something that is basically poison? And I'm like, well, because it tastes nice. Just definitely need to make sure you don't eat much. Fact number 10 to bring us home. So yes, it is generally enjoyed as a drink, or sometimes as a set pudding, like I mentioned before, but there are still places where it can be eaten as a snack, just less commonly. So it's fairly common in Syria to eat it a small bit of as a snack wrapped around a walnut, which, you know, I obviously had to try as research, and it is delicious. So that's a little bit about Amadine. I hope that you enjoyed it and found it interesting. That is it for our podcast today. I hope you found it interesting, enjoyable, inspiring, any of the above. And you can keep up to date with what I've been cooking and baking if you would like. If you want to look up the Instagram, which is just Home Baking Pod. And I tend to kind of keep that post stuff that I've been enjoying recently, stuff that I've been making, etc. So yeah, I'm going to move to a monthly format. I hope that's okay. But it's just, I still love doing the podcast. I still love talking to you. But I just want to be realistic about my time and still enjoying this as a passion project rather than seeing it as a chore. So that is what I'm going to be doing. So our next episode is going to be on the 5th of November. And by that point, we'll all be well into our fall baking, won't we, or our autumnal baking. So I hope that you really enjoy that time and make lots of apple pies and pumpkin things and all sorts. Maybe things with pears, delicious. And the next episode is going to be about lemons, specifically lemons served with pastries in various formats. So I want to finally make the lemon meringue pie that my partner's been asking me to make for about 8 years now, like as long as we've been together pretty much. I also want to make lemon bars, which I've never made before. And there are a couple of other things that I want to try out as well. So that is, lemon cream pie maybe. Oh, and I was thinking about making a shaker lemon pie. So we may not get around to all of those, but yeah, we're going to be talking about lemons and pastry, basically. So I'm very excited. I basically bought an insane amount of lemons to do this episode. So I look forward to talking to you, about a month's time. And I hope that you're well. I hope you're taking care of yourselves. And I will talk to you in a month. All right. Bye. My very silly PS this week is just that I tried to make a low sugar birthday cake for my rats, which was successful, but didn't taste that great to me as a human being because of the lack of sugar. But if you do want to try out making like a kind of oaty bake, then it was quite a good idea. It was just like dates that you soaked and then oats, a bit of honey, and was that it? And a little bit of butter. But yeah, next time I think more butter and more sugar if I'm making it for myself. But the rats did very much enjoy it. Two of them turned one this week, so it was their birthday cake. And my best friend Cheddar, my non-human best friend, it's her birthday coming up soon as well. So I will have to start planning what I'm going to make for her. Very important business, obviously. My life is ridiculous. All right. Lots of love. Take care. Bye.